We've all heard the phrase, got milk? But answering this question has become increasingly complicated with consumers' needs becoming more diverse and their awareness more global. Lately, consumers are seeking more natural, clean label foods. There's increased demand for transparency, and smart technologies are raising consumers' expectations of the product experience. Through all of this, the dairy industry is adapting and evolving to thoughtfully respond to these new demands. In this episode of Food Disruptors, we'll take a closer look at the macro forces at work. What challenges and opportunities do they present? And what do science of food professionals working in this industry need to consider as they innovate and work to ensure safe, nutritious, and sustainable dairy products for everyone? Today, I'm joined by Véronique Lagrange, consultant for the American Dairy Products Institute, and Matthew Pekoski, Vice President of Nutrition Science and Partnerships at Dairy Management Incorporated. Welcome to you both.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
So first, I'd like to give each of you a quick second to discuss a little bit about the work that you do and give us some perspective on your understanding of the dairy profession and the dairy industry. Véronique, let's start with you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate this opportunity. Yes, my name is Véronique. I've worked for over 20 years for the dairy industry. My background is food science and nutrition. And I've worked for the U.S. Dairy Export Council, looking at international markets for dairy with a focus on ingredients. And more recently, I've been doing work for the American Dairy Product Institute, which is a trade association that represents the entire supply chain of dairy ingredients. And again, my focus is business development and looking at opportunities for dairy ingredients and their benefits for consumers and manufacturers.
Excellent. We're so lucky to have your expertise today. Matthew, how about you?
Yeah, hi. Thanks again for having me. My background is I'm a nutrition scientist by training, a PhD in nutritional sciences, and I'm also a registered dietitian. So I think, you know, both of those kind of backgrounds and training really serve me well in my role here with dairy management. And it's kind of twofold. One, being one of the nutrition scientists within our research team, I work to help put in place and manage research projects that we hope will ultimately support the value that dairy foods and ingredients bring in the diets of people basically across the lifespan. In addition, I also work and collaborate with others in our organization to kind of help translate and package that research into meaningful messages or business opportunities for health professionals as well as the dairy industry.
Excellent. Well, again, we were just so lucky to have both of your expertise today. And I really want to dive straight in and really talk about what the biggest challenges are that the dairy industry is facing today. Matthew, what do you see as some of the biggest challenges?
Sure. Yeah, and I definitely like to start by saying, and this is kind of a common way to address this, that anytime, you know, we present challenges, we could also flip that on its head and look as an opportunity. So while, you know, I'm going to present, you know, give some ideas in terms of challenges, I really look at it as an opportunity and hopefully kind of spur thought and enthusiasm for really, you know, seizing this opportunity. And that really is, you know, one of the examples is moving beyond kind of the way in which a lot of the ways for milk specifically, that milk has been kind of marketed and promoted to consumers. And that's kind of more in a commodity sense, right? It's, you know, you walk down the dairy aisle and we see, you know, rows and rows of 1 gallon jugs. And there's very little kind of consumer messaging or exciting packaging with those jugs. And yet when you look at, you know, our competition or our challenge right now, really the proliferation of various options and in the beverage category specifically, you know, from plant-based alternatives to drinkable kombuchas and other beverages that, you know, are marketed with a lot of interest, visually interesting kind of messages that resonate to consumer, really positioned as value-added ingredients. And I think, you know, the dairy industry really has room to grow in that space. So that's one of the things that's a challenge, but an opportunity, I think, to really help market our products and spur innovation to develop value added dairy products and with messaging or positioning that really capitalize on consumer interests and need, whether it's, you know, higher protein, lower sugar, whether it's for sports and exercise recovery, whether it's for digestive health. A lot of these opportunities, I think, some of our discussion throughout the podcast. But, you know, that's where I'd really challenge us as an industry to kind of take advantage of that. And, You know, there are some products on the market that are doing that. And I look to Fairlife as one example that really has kind of, you know, developed value added product and a product line really that have tried to capitalize on consumer interests in certain things such as protein, lower sugar, lactose free, and really marketed it as premium, and consumers are buying it and they're enjoying it.
I think that whole line of thought is really interesting because, you know, you growing up, you know, you go to the store, you get a gallon of milk, and it's very much like you said, a commodity that is just always in the fridge. And I actually never thought about it that way, that there's now a lot of these other types of products coming in that are reaching the consumer in different ways with that value added type of proposition. So Veronique, what do you see as some of the biggest challenges or opportunities, really, as you might phrase it?
Well, thanks. Yeah, I would like to echo Matt's comments. And obviously, the competition from plants is a large issue for the industry, even though really dairy is perfectly suitable for vegetarian diets. So so this competition might explain some of the decrease in fluid milk consumption. Consumers have been attracted to dairy-free alternatives. But from an ingredient perspective, we see the growth of demand for protein is very strong. Consumers are looking at sources of protein, so that's a good thing for us because we have a high quality protein. The challenge for us is that some of those alternative protein are positioning themselves as an alternative to dairy, and sometimes promoting health benefits that are really were based on research on dairy. So we see that consumers, particularly millennials, tend to be driven by information they receive from non-conventional information sources, their neighbors or webs and so forth. And they're really largely driven by emotions and perceptions. And those other suppliers have done a better job at connecting emotionally with those consumers using social media and peer influence. So we have to rethink ourselves. And our challenge is really to reposition dairy in a new light and make dairy exciting and sexy again, because again, we have a really good, strong scientific platform, and proteins, dairy proteins do work in terms of delivering health benefits. So, but we need to explain that better. So I think that's, again, we've invested a lot in science, maybe less on our innovation and packaging, but now we need to rethink and see how we can communicate and connect emotionally with tomorrow's consumers.
Very interesting. And I think we've already kind of touched on this a little bit, but in terms of the biggest opportunities that there are for the industry, did either of you have anything to add to that respect?
Sure, if I may, I think, of course, the largest opportunity is a global market. We see demand for dairy growing at 2.5% globally, but much faster rates are in emerging economies, which by and large are dairy deficit countries. So this is very good news. And it's good news for those populations as well, because we see in emerging economies still very, very high rates of malnutrition and stunting. You know, stunting is when people, children don't grow as much as they should and could. One out of four children around the world actually is stunted. This has an impact not only on the individual because they don't grow to their full potential, but it's been documented to have actually an impact on GDP up to 11% for some countries. So clearly, dairy can make a difference. In fact, just recently, there was a study which showed that adding dairy protein to school lunch in emerging countries, emerging economies, can actually support their cognitive development and improve test scores for children. So really a great opportunity to improve the quality of life and personal outcome for populations around the world. In now closer to home, in our developed countries, the opportunities is aging. In fact, yes, you know, our population is aging. As we age, we lose muscle, we face a growing incidence of diabetes, obesity, and so forth. And again, this is very positive for dairy because we have a quite an impressive body of science, which shows how dairy proteins consumed as a supplement or part of the daily diet can help slow down that loss of muscle, help us keep functionality as we age, can actually help manage blood sugar, reduce fat mass, particular abdominal mass. So a lot of benefits that are truly unique to dairy proteins. So I think it's a great opportunity. We can really improve health outcomes for our consumers, both in emerging economies and developed economies. Again, we just need to make sure that we communicate effectively. Another opportunity that we see is increased uses in non-traditional sector. For example, pet food, aquaculture, dairy products and co-products can also be used in bioplastics and edible film. So a lot of opportunities for us in the future.
Aquaculture. So we're going to feed fish milk. Is that the one of the new avenues?
Actually, you are right. Dairy proteins, when fed to carnivorous fingerlings, help reduce mortality, and it's a big deal, really. You know, aquaculture now represents over 50% of the seafood consumed around the world, and certainly is seen as a valuable source of protein to feed a global world. I mean, we only have so much land we can cultivate, but certainly we can use more of the oceans and water to grow food. So certainly that will that's an opportunity that we see.
Matthew, what sort of opportunities do you see?
Yep. So in the second study, what it showed was that daily consumption of 1.5 servings of yogurt, and again, this is just regular yogurt consumed over 9 weeks, what we saw was reduced markers of chronic inflammation, and also what we saw was improvements in markers of gut integrity or intestinal barrier function. And what that really means is kind of it's a better functioning gut. And by function, I mean really the ability of the gut. It really serves as a protective barrier to the rest of our body to kind of let the good stuff in and keep the bad stuff out, so to speak. What that really showed is kind of giving additional scientific support or a mechanism as to why yogurt could be having this benefit, not only from reducing inflammation and adding to the larger body of observational evidence that has shown that, you know, eating yogurt may be associated with reduced risk for type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and less weight gain over time. So there's really been a large body of science, not only with dairy foods, but yogurt specifically, in terms of reducing risk for various chronic diseases. And these two studies, the one acute study and then this longer term study, really, you know, add to that body of evidence and give us some insight as to the mechanisms as to why yogurt is having some of these benefits.
Well, I think that makes such logical sense because, you know, you go to the doctor, you get antibiotics, and they tell you make sure you eat yogurt with this to help, you know, your microbiome and stuff. So it's really interesting to hear about some of the research that's going on with dairy in terms of gut health. I do want to switch gears to talk a little bit about some new and emerging kind of consumer attitudes. You know, consumers are making some of their food choices based off of environmental consciousness, really. So essentially, they want to eat foods that they feel don't negatively impact the planet. So Matthew, I'm curious what innovative approaches you're seeing as dairy companies are addressing this issue of sustainable nutrition when we are having new dairy products developed.
Yeah, that's a great question. And definitely we're seeing that not only in consumers, but health professionals and that we're working with, you know, it's becoming more and more of an issue and a question as to what is kind of dairy's story to tell in this space. And really, you know, there's a lot of, it can be quite challenging because there's a lot of misinformation out there. And, you know, consumers oftentimes don't know who or what to believe. But I think really the opportunity for the dairy industry is really to tell our story because we've got such an amazing story to tell. And there's really two components of that story that I kind of want to highlight or draw out. And one is that, you know, stewardship and sustainability have been really a way of doing business, you know, going back generations and generations with dairy farmers in the dairy community. And really the consumers today, they just don't know about it. So again, that's really an opportunity for us to help tell that story, right? And it starts with our farmers. You know, what we know in getting consumer insights on the work that we do, we know that when farmers connect with people to tell their story, it really resonates. Dairy farmers have really always been responsible stewards of the land, and they care for their animals. And even before anyone knew what a carbon footprint was, they were continuously looking for ways to improve breeding techniques, improve animal care, specialize and tailor their feeding practices and technology to really improve the efficiency and the nutritional value of the products that farmers are producing. And what we've seen is, as a result, each gallon of milk produced in 2007 requires 90% less land, 65% less water, with a 63% smaller carbon footprint than it did in 1944. So again, I think, you know, while this is kind of a new and emerging area of science as well as for consumers, you know, dairy farmers have a longstanding commitment to continually improving in this area. So building upon the dairy's commitment for continuous improvement, we conducted what's called a life cycle assessment, which really looks at the environmental impact through a product's life cycle from farm to table. This was really critical in that it helped to establish a baseline environmental impact, and it would also serve to set as a benchmark from which we could make goals on continuous improvement. And of note, the dairy industry has made a goal to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 25% in 2020. What we found from that life cycle assessment is that U.S. dairy accounts for 2% of U.S. greenhouse gas emissions, 5% of total water withdrawal, and uses only 3.7% of U.S. farmland. So to help put some of this data in perspective, let's just look at greenhouse gas emissions in more detail. And if you look at, there's various contributors to greenhouse gas emissions, and data that we know from the average U.S. household carbon footprint, the biggest contributor is travel, which is at 30%, which is mostly gasoline to fuel our cars and fuel airplanes for when we travel. Next is the carbon footprint of our homes, which is 29%. And that's, you know, the biggest contributor of that's electricity. And all food is 15%. And then I mentioned dairy is only 2% of that. So, you know, when you kind of put it in context, you know, it's fairly small, I would say. The second point I want to make, really building off some of those environmental impact numbers, is what I think gets lost a bit in this discussion is that really the production, all food production comes with an environmental cost. So having an environmental impact is not exclusive to dairy. Again, all food production comes with an environmental cost. So really when looking at this issue, what I think we need to do is look at the cost of the environmental cost of producing that food and weigh that against the benefit of that food or that industry provides. And, you know, I'm just not sure why some are really losing that cost to benefit ratio when this discussion is addressed. When you look at that benefit, you know, there's numerous to highlight. You know, one is the nutrient contributions dairy makes in terms of nourishing the population. So what we know is milk is a good to excellent source of 9 essential nutrients, including high quality protein, calcium, vitamins A, B12, a number of other vitamins and minerals. It's the number one food source of 9 essential nutrients in the diets of children and 6 essential nutrients in the diets for adults in the U.S., including 3 of the 4 nutrients of concern noted in the 2015 Dietary Guidelines for Americans, and that being calcium, potassium, and vitamin D. So again, if you reduced or removed milk and dairy foods from the diet, there would be significant nutrient gaps that would be difficult to replace with other foods. The other points from a beneficial standpoint I want to make is that this nutrition is really affordable. For about $1 a day, people can get the 3 servings of milk recommended in the dietary guidelines and all the nutrients that I had just highlighted in my previous point. How about the economic benefit, right? Dairy community supports roughly 3 million jobs and generates $625 billion for the American economy per year. Additionally, cows really can be looked at one of nature's original recyclers, right? This, I think, is just a really cool story. And when I've kind of learned more about this through our environmental and animal scientists, it's really kind of hit home for me. So, again, when we look at what the diets of our dairy cows, about 80% of what is fed to cows is not really edible for human consumption. So think about the husks on corn or almond hulls or pulp from citrus fruits. So these would be kind of elements of our food supply that typically would be wasted. However, cows are able to eat these as part of their diet and then recycle those unedible foods and turn it into nutrient-rich milk. So I think that's just really an amazing story when you think of sustainability and the ability to kind of recycle and get back to the food system. And one last point I want to make in terms of the cows being one of nature's original recyclers is that many people don't even realize the value that cow manure provides. Cow manure contains minerals and nutrients that can be used as a natural fertilizer for crops and land, and it returns those nutrients to the soil and supports growing plants and crops. This in turn reduces the need for use of synthetic fertilizers by farmers, which helps to conserve natural resources. So again, I think, you know, all food comes with an environmental cost. And when you look at the environmental impact of dairy foods, I think that cost in dairy production, I think that cost is quite low when you compare it to the number of benefits that are derived.
Sure. And so, Veronique, I guess maybe from the business side of things, how are you seeing the dairy industry address the environmental consciousness of consumers? Any new and innovative approaches there?
Thanks. Yeah, I like Matt's comments, and yes, Cal, the ultimate recycler. Indeed, from a food technologist perspective, you have to think that, yeah, milk has no shell, stem, roots, or whatever, right? 100% of the milk can be used for human food, so we see zero waste here. In fact, all the components of dairy can be used in various products. And again, from a food technology perspective, we see at the plant level really a greater effort by all dairy ingredient suppliers to have a closed cycle, and in particular for even recycling the water, oftentimes that's through evaporation, that is used within the plant for cleaning. So we see from a food technology perspective a great deal of advances in closing that cycle and making 100% of the milk used. I think that's important. Also, from the sustainability perspective, to add to what Matt was saying, I think we need to remember that globally, worldwide, it's important to meet protein requirements. And dairy proteins actually are the highest quality protein, whether you measure it by the PDCAS or the new DIAS score, you know, we are 110, 120. This compares with other sources of protein that are sometimes half. So what it really means is from a volume perspective, you can have your nutritional needs met with half the quantity of food, and I think people forget to factor that in their equation. So also, if you were to consume only poor quality protein, that means a lot more bulk, a lot more calories, and that again is not sustainable. We already have a large portion of the population suffering from overnutrition, so it's important to eat more of the, as Matt mentioned, those food sources that meet our nutritional needs the closest, and not exceed on the bulk side of the equation. Also, on the sustainability side of thing, people forget sometimes that some other ingredients have very long supply chain. Don't mean to pick on them, but just as an example, you know, pea proteins are actually yellow peas that are grown, for example, in Canada. They are shipped to China because they use the starch to make cellophane noodles. The co-stream, the byproduct is protein that is shipped back to the U.S. after extensive processing. So we need to look at the supply chain. Dairy ingredients tend to be, produced. The milk is produced within an hour or oftentimes 50 miles of the plant. It's processed there within 72 hours and then delivered. So dairy ingredients tend to have a very short supply chain. And I think consumers need to realize that contrasts with other sources of ingredients.
You both mentioned the great benefit with dairy in terms of nutrition. And really, one of the big trends we're noticing lately is that consumers are really starting to seek products that cater to their specific health-conscious diets, especially a more protein-centric diet, which seems like a great opportunity for dairy. So I'm curious, from both of your perspectives, what sort of opportunities and challenges do you see here for dairy product development? Matthew, how about you?
So whether it be within the nutrient-rich package of dairy foods like milk, cheese, and yogurt, or dairy as a protein ingredient, whether it be whey, milk protein concentrate, or casein, there really are a lot of opportunities for dairy when it comes to meeting consumer needs or interests in protein. One of the opportunities I see, and it's really kind of building off some of Veronique's previous comments, is promoting the fact that dairy proteins are amongst the highest quality proteins available. And you know, what some consumers may not realize is that while protein can be found in a number of different foods or food-derived protein ingredients, the quality of that protein can differ fairly significantly. And that's based on a number of factors, whether it be the amino acid composition. And really within that, we're looking at higher quality proteins have the full array of essential amino acids in sufficient amounts required by the body. But also the digestibility of that protein and then the bioavailability of the digested and absorbed amino acids that are derived from that protein. So again, gram for gram, dairy proteins provide one of the highest concentrations of essential amino acids and leucine, which, you know, significant body of science has shown are the primary drivers of muscle protein synthesis, which ultimately leads to the building and maintenance of muscle as well as other body tissues. And, you know, I do a lot of talks and education in this area. And one thing I continuously try to highlight is, you know, while some may feel muscle is only important for athletes or those who are really looking for the aesthetic benefits of having a kind of more fit, muscular, or lean body, really, I can assure you that nothing could be farther from the truth. And really, from a consumer benefit standpoint, you can make a pretty significant case for the fact of the valuable role that protein and muscle play in three main categories. And certainly that's within sport nutrition, but that, you know, goes from athletes to just all folks who are trying to lead active and healthy lifestyles, weight management, as well as healthy aging. So while the sports and exercise space is probably one of the most robust when it comes to recognizing the importance of protein and the value that dairy protein brings to these consumers, there's really a large body of science. And in fact, two recent position stands, one from the International Society of Sport Nutrition, and the second is a joint position stand from the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, American College of Sports Medicine, and the Dietitians of Canada. And both really recognize not only the importance of high quality proteins, but they recognize and call out the science that's supporting dairy proteins in particular as being really bringing robust value in supporting the maintenance and development of muscle because of the high quality that it provides. And again, in terms of the essential amino acid composition, the digestibility, and the bioavailability. From a weight management perspective, you know, where muscle really plays a role is that, you know, many people, when they think about weight loss, you know, the ideal in that situation is to maintain muscle while preferentially losing body fat. And muscle is important in that context, one, because certainly it just contributes to our kind of ability to be perform various activities of daily living, right? The more compromised we are in terms of the muscle that we have, we're less able to, you know, whether it's carry groceries upstairs, do yard work, participate in various sporting activities, and just kind of lead a healthy, rich life. And, you know, the ability of a dairy protein to optimize the rebuilding of muscle tissue, research has shown as part of reduced calorie diets, it's going to be preferential in terms of its ability to maintain muscle while body fat is being lost. So again, in the context of weight management, there definitely is value there from a muscle perspective. The other thing, piece that's important with muscle is that it contributes to resting energy expenditure. So in addition to allowing us to kind of, again, perform those various activities daily living, it's going to contribute to just the amount of calories that we burn over the course of the day. So again, muscle is critical in the context of weight management. And lastly, healthy aging. And this is a topic I'm really passionate about. And one of the main reasons why is trying to kind of highlight the fact that healthy aging and the ability to maintain muscle with age is not something that we should only worry about when we're 65, 70 years of age. And at that time, you know, you start to think about, oh, geez, I really need to think about my exercise routine, think about my protein intake, preferably high quality protein intake to support the maintenance of that muscle. Because the loss of muscle with aging, actually, we know from science, occurs, you know, somewhere between the third and fourth decade of life. So beginning around 40 years, you know, mid-30s, 40 years of age, we start to gradually lose muscle. So, you know, I kind of liken it to kind of preventative maintenance on your car, right? You want to take care of your car. You want to keep it running for a long period of time. You want to annually, you want to do certain things to help maintain that it's functioning properly. So it's kind of similar when you look at the health of our muscles, right? It's something that when I'm in my 30s, 40s, and 50s, I want to be doing everything I can for preventative maintenance. And that includes, again, routine exercise and proper nutritional intake, of which, you know, high-quality proteins and dairy proteins are one of the most important things you can do to help maintain that muscle so you don't wake up at 65 and you have, you know, a huge repair bill, so to speak. So again, really passionate about that area. And I think what we need to make consumers realize is that it's something we could be talking about to consumers when they're in their 40s and 50s in terms of the value that dairy proteins bring with healthy aging.
Excellent. Veronique, what sort of opportunities and challenges do you see for dairy product development with the new health conscious sort of attitude of consumers?
Yeah, I like the concept of Matt. And I'm in that age group, by the way. I do need to look at keeping my muscle. And it is a challenge because, you know, it means with a new possible recommendation for seniors or older people, we need to consume 70 grams a day for women, 90 or more for men. That's quite a bit of protein to consume. And at the same time, you know, I don't want to consume more calories and have to watch my total intake of calories. So that's a challenge we face. I think it's particularly important for women because we don't want to over-consume calories. So we need to look at format that will deliver protein without delivering too much calories at the same time. We also need to look at delivering this protein throughout the day. Our breakfast, for example, tends to be not provide enough protein. So that's certainly a meal that needs to be enriched, because from evening to the next lunch, you know, it's a long time. That's a time when we see some catabolism, loss of muscle. So we need to think of new formats, essentially, which offer convenience, taste, of course, food safety, which are affordable. So right now, of course, there's a wide variety of protein bars, some excellent, really, really good. We see new protein bars with reduced calorie, reduced sugar. That's exciting. We see protein waters, most of them formulated with whey proteins, and they are really, truly excellent, delivering, you know, up to 15 grams of protein and very little calories. So that's a great option. But we still need more formats. We need compact formats. We need products, you know, I don't know, gels or spreads and so forth. So we can have new formats to use protein. We also need to make sure we have products that are available with an extended shelf life, product that can be distributed through convenience stores or in vending machines so people can eat on the go. You know, if you go to your average vending machine, it's very unlikely that you will find a decent source of protein. There will be probably a lot of junk food. So I think there's a lot of opportunities for technologists to be creative here and help us meet our nutritional needs with affordable, high quality, and low-calorie foods.
Yeah, it definitely seems like a ton of opportunity there. Mm-hmm. So I do want to talk a little bit. You both touched on this, I think, a little bit in the beginning of the podcast, but we are seeing consumers also switching to plant-based alternative, quote-unquote, milks, because there's a perception that they're healthier or better for them than products derived from cow's milk. So I'm curious, could you both talk a little bit about this perception? Why do you think it's there? And is it true? Matthew, let's start with you.
Sure. Yeah. You know, in my opinion, I think some of this perception is really coming from a broader push that we're seeing regarding the value of plant-based diets, which really are perceived as healthier, and the fact that in general, people are not consuming the recommended amounts of fruits and vegetables and whole grains that are currently recommended by the dietary guidelines. So, you know, on one hand, could we all be better served by increasing our consumption of these foods? You know, yes, certainly. But, you know, I think it's also important to note that people are also not meeting the recommended number of dairy servings currently recommended in dietary guidelines. So we're falling about 1 to 1.5 servings per day short on average. So we also would benefit from increasing our consumption of dairy as well. The other thing I'd like to point out is that, you know, I don't think that plant-based has to mean devoid of animal products. And you know, when we really look at each of the three healthy eating patterns outlined in the dietary guidelines, each of these patterns include between 2 to 3 servings of dairy foods a day. So really overall, I would love it if we could just move away from the plant animal-based terminology and just look for people to consume a balanced variety of nutrient-rich foods. And what the science tells us is that dairy foods are an essential part of a healthy eating pattern. Regarding your more specific question in the comparison of milk to the variety of plant-based alternatives that are currently on the market, you know, despite sitting side by side in the dairy care kind of use of the term milk, really what I want to highlight is that most non-dairy alternatives do not provide the same nutrient profile of cow's milk. And in fact, it's really important to note that aside from fortified soy beverage, which is included as an option within the dairy group in the current U.S. dietary guidelines, the current guidelines explicitly state that other products sold as quote-unquote milk, but made from plants, whether that be almond, rice, coconut, hemp, and other plant-based alternatives, those are to not be included as part of the dairy group because their overall nutrient content is not similar to dairy and fortified soy beverages. So I think that's really an important thing to point out to health professionals and consumers, and something that we're constantly trying to do from an educational perspective. Another few points that I'd like to raise regarding that comparison is that, you know, what consumers can count on milk having the same 9 essential nutrients regardless of the brand they choose, because there's a regulated standard of identity that ensures the nutritional value and safety of milk. In contrast, there's no standard of identity for plant-based alternatives, and their nutrient composition can really vary from brand to brand. So it requires consumers being a lot more savvy in terms of trying to read and compare nutrition facts panels to even have a general idea of what nutrients are they getting from these alternatives.
Hmm. Well, it's interesting, too, that you say that a decent number of consumers don't necessarily obtain the recommended dairy intake daily, which, I mean, I definitely intake enough. I eat so much dairy. So Veronique, how about you? What's your perspective on the perception of plant versus cow milk, and why it's there and whether or not it's true?
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to echo Matt's comment. And I know IFT has an international audience, so I'd like to bring this again from a more global perspective. In fact, in the US, the consumers may not be very well served by regulations. For example, in Europe, those alternatives cannot be called milk, right? Their milk is beverages can only be from a cow, and consumers can make the difference. In the US, there's more flexibility in using the terms. But in fact, Matt is right. I mean, when you look at the composition of those alternative beverages, and again, that's how they're marketed in Europe, they're juices, right? They contain mostly carbohydrates. Sometimes they're enriched with vitamins or minerals, which are added, but they're essentially juices. And I think it would be helpful to have regulations that help consumers make those choices. They are very different products. That's all I would say. In terms of consumers moving to these alternative beverages, sometimes it's because of perception of lactose intolerance, and indeed, that's very real for people who suffer from it. And there are lactose-free alternatives in dairy beverages. In terms of allergenicity, it's quite interesting that people, in fact, you know, many of those nuts are just as allergen as dairy. So I don't see an advantage here, but it's all about perception. And again, we need to make a better job at communicating benefits and fact versus fictions to consumers.
Sort of along the same line, the clean label trend is really becoming a standard as the demand for transparency rises, not only redefining production chains, but also the way brands communicate with consumers. And this trend really is not going away anytime soon. How is the dairy industry responding to this? And what do you both see as opportunities for future dairy products? Véronique, let's start with you.
Thank you. Yes, actually, I think dairy, again, I'm looking at this from a food technologist perspective. You know, dairy ingredients are quote unquote clean. I mean, because there's no added chemicals in the manufacturers of those ingredients. There's no need for acids and so forth. They're very, very simple processing, just filtration techniques to develop those ingredients. So by intrinsically, they are clean ingredients. Furthermore, the flavor is very good. So when you use dairy ingredients, you don't need to add masking agents to remove some of the beany or green flavors that are associated with other ingredients. So that's important from a food technologist perspective. There's no issues also with solubility. You don't need to do very much. And in fact, their ingredients by themselves can really help food technologies simplify or clean their labels. Their function as gelling agent, as emulsifying agent. So they provide a lot of functionality in products. So I think they're very functional, very helpful for food technologies when they look at their entire product. And you can use those dairy ingredients to actually displace some other less desirable ingredients.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, Véronique kind of hit on a lot of the key points. Certainly one being, you know, dairy foods really serve as kind of the original kind of clean label, right? When you look at, you know, whether it's milk, yogurts, you know, cheeses, those products on the market, I mean, they're very kind of, you know, small number of ingredients in comparison to some of the other alternatives that are on the market. So I think, you know, really the opportunity for the dairy industry in that respect is kind of just kind of communicating that and drawing that out a bit more to consumers. I think the other opportunity from the ingredient side, and you know, Véronique kind of highlighted this as well, is really the opportunity for different dairy ingredients and a lot of the either milk protein concentrates, whey protein concentrates, what they could do is help kind of provide a kind of quote unquote cleaner label when you look at the ingredients they can replace in various products. So a few examples of that, you know, milk protein concentrates can replace modified food starch and hydrocolloids such as xanthan gum, carrageenan, locust bean and gum. And it could act as kind of a natural water binder for sauces, soups, dips, processed meats. Whey protein concentrate can replace hydrocolloids and chemical emulsifiers in acidic systems such as salad dressings and heated systems such as baked products. Lower protein WBCs and MPCs also contain lactose, and that lactose contributes to browning when it's added as an ingredient in the food product. And it can reduce the need for added colors like caramel color. So again, I think, you know, one is again, looking at dairy foods as kind of the one of the original kind of, you know, again, quote unquote, clean label foods. And then secondly, really the value that dairy ingredients can bring in terms of, you know, quote unquote, cleaning up a label in all different applications.
That's really interesting. And let's circle back around as well on food waste. I know we touched on it a little bit earlier, but really it's a hot political agenda item lately, and governments are taking action to tackle this issue. For instance, the U.S. government recently committed to the first ever national food waste reduction goal, which called for a 50% reduction by 2030. Véronique, I'm curious what challenges and really opportunities, you might, as you might phrase it, this presents to the dairy industry.
Well, thank you. Yes, as I mentioned earlier, we know there's no waste in milk, right? 100% of it is edible. So certainly we don't have to deal with a disposal of a lot of side products or co-products. That's a great benefit. In ingredient manufacture, really all components of milk are used. You know, fat is used for butter or cream, ice cream. The proteins are used for nutrition. Lactose is a key ingredient in infant formula and confectionery. The milk minerals can be used in supplements for both human and feed. So really, we have no waste. There's no wasted byproduct. And again, as Matt mentioned, in fact, the dairy industry itself contributes greatly to reduction of waste overall, since over 80% of what cows eat is not human edible. They do contribute to reducing waste, if you look at the entire supply chain. In fact, in some of emerging economies, closer to 100% of what the cows eat is not human edible. So I think we're really well positioned here in being part of the solution in reducing food waste.
Yeah, I think that all makes a lot of sense. I am curious about, I know the production of yogurt, for instance, has been very high, like Greek yogurt, for instance. And I know in some of my classes back in school, I've heard about the issue of acid whey. I'm curious if you have any comments sort of on acid whey, because it's a unique byproduct that there are some uses, but there was just a lot of it produced. I don't know if you have any sort of perspective on that.
I may just comment quickly. Yes, indeed, acid whey from yogurt production is a difficult co-product to deal with, because in fact, if the yogurt is well done, all the protein remains in the yogurt, right? And it's it does not contain much protein. But on the other hand, because it's very rich in carbohydrates that are fermentable, it's great. It can be used in biodigester and fermentation. So I think most of the operations right now recycle that acid whey into an energy source, which is in turn is used in the plant or in the dairy. So I think that by and large, the industry has done a really good job at recovering this waste, essentially, and turning it into an energy source.
Matthew, what do you have to add in terms of food waste and what challenges and opportunities it really presents to the dairy industry?
Sure. And, you know, kind of going back to the question where you noted kind of the government has recently committed to a kind of national food waste reduction goal. Well, actually, the Innovation Center for U.S. Dairy, so really, you know, the dairy industry is part of that collaboration, along with the Environmental Protection Agency, Feeding America, Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, and others, including the government, and really this initiative called Further with Food. So collectively, yep, through education, development of resources, and a number of initiatives, you know, We're committed to being part of that solution in terms of reducing food waste. So, again, that's one thing that, you know, we need to be loud and proud in terms of the industry's commitment to being part of the solution. A few other examples. You know, we currently have an initiative here at Dairy Management, Dairy Nourishes America, where we're working with a number of producers in the dairy industry to try to divert milk that would typically be wasted to local food banks to help feed people in need. And what we know from working with food banks is milk is one of the most requested foods at food banks, but it's the least donated. So, you know, if you're a processor out there and you have some milk that may be wasted, you could look to try and build relationships with those food banks in your area to donate that milk. And it's a great, you know, obviously you should feel good about doing it given the nutritional value. And again, it's one of the ones that's least donated, but it's a great consumer social responsibility story as well. Another thing to highlight from food waste is, you know, kind of a recurring theme that we've hit in a lot of our answers here today is really emerging and developing technology that really now exists to use food waste to generate electricity. And one of the ways in which that can be done is anaerobic digesters. So some farms are now utilizing anaerobic digesters. And what those do is, you know, those capture the methane generated when food waste would be degraded over time. And these digesters concentrate that methane and utilize it and convert it to energy that not only powers the farm, but that can be used to power local communities. And there's a number of examples of these in dairy farms across the country. Another way, just from an education standpoint with consumers, is, you know, we know that consumers throw away up to 40% of the food that they purchase. I mean, that's just mind-boggling when you think about it. So there really is a big need to just teach consumers to be more mindful in their shopping and cooking practices so that they can make a conscious effort to not, you know, over-purchase foods or prepare just enough, right? Or when you have, you know, finished, when you have leftovers, you know, freeze and store what you can that you can have for later use. So I think it's, you know, through technology, through consumer education, and through working with processors to, you know, find homes for that food, such as local food banks.
Excellent. So we've talked a lot about a lot of different aspects of the dairy industry, and I'm curious, since it really seems like there's a lot to learn and to know, what are some of the resources and advice you would have for people who want to keep up with the latest and greatest of the dairy industry? And even for those who are breaking into the industry, what sort of resources and advice would you give them? Veronique, let's start with you.
Thank you. Yes, I'll address that for your membership, to all food technologists are looking for information on ingredients in particular. Of course, DMI, U.S. Dairy Export Council, have a lot of resources online. Just wanted to say that also the American Dairy Product Institutes offer some live courses. They have a what they call the Dairy 360 course. It's a 2.5-day, very intensive course. A lot of companies actually send multiple staff to that course. It covers pretty much everything you need to know, you know, composition, functionality, nutrition, microbiology, food safety, or even risk management and purchasing strategy. So that's a good course that people sign up for when they come from another industry. There's also a Dairy 101 course, which is organized by ADPI for the members. It's usually held at their location and can be fully customized. So a lot of companies take advantage of that program. They also have videos and short courses on their website under the Dairy Academy. And also there is something called the Center of Excellence, and I know a lot of folks take advantage of that. It's actually a network of 14 different experts in different areas, again, from anything from risk management, nutrition, product development, processing, technologies, and so forth. And anyone actually can contact the Center of Excellence, and members get free advice from those experts. It's also kept confidential. So I know a lot of product development folks rely on all these resources to learn more about dairy ingredients.
Key, I guess, repositories for being able to continually keeping up with the latest and greatest when it comes to dairy nutrition and sciences. Our website, so nationaldairycouncil.org. National Dairy Council is the research and education arm of Dairy Management, Inc. So we're continually updating content on nationaldairycouncil.org. So that's a great place to go visit routinely to get the latest and greatest. Also, I would recommend folks follow us on Twitter at National Dairy Council, because we continually share kind of all of our new research updates, and our experts write nice summaries of that research and hopefully help to translate it for various audiences. Additionally, we have a website, dairygood.org. That information kind of is similar, but it's distilled a bit more to kind of be more consumer-friendly, consumer-facing. So that might be of interest to folks out there as well. I think the other kind of general point I'd mention from you know, resources and professional development is just really, you know, looking to continually build, you know, relationships and contacts throughout the industry. It's something, you know, Veronique mentioned she's been in the industry for 20 years. I've been with, you know, the dairy industry now a little over 10 years, and then in just food and beverage industry, almost 15 years. And, you know, really, where you're able to get information aside from kind of these repositories, whether it be a website and such, is really the personal relationships that you build. Attending scientific meetings, professional development courses and such. And, you know, don't just go to the meeting to absorb the presentations. you know, meet people, build relationships, stay in contact with them, because, you know, a lot of times there's questions that come up that, you know, any of us individually, you know, may not be able to answer, or we may have a piece of that puzzle, but we don't have the full puzzle. And, you know, where you really can bring your value is, you know, being able to tap into all your different resources, reaching out to contacts that, you know, again, with that shared knowledge, you can make a significant impact. So that's what I'd encourage all the, you know, young professionals to do that are kind of just getting started in this industry, is just, you know, continually look to build relationships, stay in contact, and rely on each other to tell our story.
Well, I have had a very good time speaking with both of you today. Thanks so much for taking the time. I'd also like to thank our listeners for joining us. If you're interested in learning more about dairy science, IFT also offers several webcasts offered through our dairy division. They also offer an online introduction to dairy science course designed to enhance existing knowledge of general food science or provide a pathway for those interested in learning more about the field of dairy foods. This course covers fundamentals of milk and milk processing for a variety of dairy products, including chemical and physical properties, safety, and sustainability. To learn more, visit ift.org/learnonline. Thanks so much for listening to Food Disruptors. I'm your host, Matt Teagarden. Have a great day, everyone.